for listening. Thank you for downloading. And you can follow us at clockend_talk because we are the Clock End Talk. How are we, guys? So we've got Tony. We've got Tony, Carl, Savvy, and Schwinn. We've got a full everybody wanting to jump on tonight. So, today, wherever you're listening around the world. So we'll start with Tony, and we'll get straight into the Everton match. What was your thoughts, Tony? We'll start with the lineup, mate.
Yeah, pretty much. I think that in Wenger's mind is our strongest team at the moment. It's the first time, obviously, the front three have played together. The Xhaka-Ramsey partnership has tended to work quite well. In general, I know people will pick at that because they, you can always point out examples of when something hasn't worked well, but in general, the partnerships work quite well. And the back five is, I mean, it's Mertesacker, with Mustafi out, I think Mertesacker comes in as the top three. And there's an argument for Holding, obviously, but with Mertesacker not playing on Thursday, I thought the back five or six was pretty much guaranteed. I think the team pretty much picked itself.
5-2 was a true reflection of the score you thought, of the team's performance?
Should have been 10. I mean, that's not a negative. We played, to be honest, the first 10 minutes, until we went 1-0 down, is the best we've played all season. We was, like, the speed we was moving the ball. Everton were very poor. They were so open at the back, but we was very good. Went 1-0 down, and obviously, I mean, I was sitting in the stands and thinking, there is no way we're going to lose this game, and I'm never like that. Even at 1-0, I just thought that we cannot lose this game. Mm-hmm. It was never going to happen. But we took a while. It hit us for a bit, and we had a 10-15 minute period after the goal where we was a bit crap. And then once we equalised, it was only ever going to go one way. We had a bit of a hairy moment at 2-1 as well, where they started to come back into the game, but the sending off completely ruined it for them. Not only because they were going down to 10 men, but he was their best player by a million miles. In the first half, he was unbelievable, Gay. So him getting sent off hit them doubly, not just losing a man, but losing their best man.
I feel for the Twitter trolls, and actually, I do change my mind now, because there was about the first 10 minutes we were going really well, and then when that first goal, there was a lot of hatred towards Xhaka. What's your take on it, mate?
So, in the ground, I mean, look, it was clearly a mistake and a bad one at that. And in the ground, we thought it definitely wasn't a foul. I mean, I've seen people say, oh, it should have been a foul for the goal. It definitely wasn't. And even if it was, I could see why some people may say it, but even if it was so marginal. You can't expect the ref to give that every time, especially when you're away and it's early on in the game within the first 10, 15 minutes. So, first off, I put it down to purely a mistake and not, it wasn't fouled, I don't think. But when I saw it again, I mean, I thought at the time at the ground, Mertesacker kind of stitched him up with a poor ball. And when I've seen it again, he definitely did. It weren't the best ball for Mertesacker. He put him in trouble. And because they were pressing high early on, if you see that, there's not many shows. I mean, I don't know the highlights packages, different people obviously getting around the world. But if you see it from the camera behind the goal, Xhaka actually didn't have any options. There was not a single pass onto him because of the way they pressed. So Mertesacker, in giving that ball, has stitched him up. That said, it is still Xhaka's fault. You've got to protect the ball better than that. He had to take a touch because there was no options on, as I said, because the way the ball was given to him, there was no one he could just pop it off to first time. But when you take that touch, you've got to protect the ball better. So it is his fault. But again, it's another one. He had one earlier in the season as well, where it is his fault and it is a mistake, but it's nowhere near as bad as it looks. As I said, he's still got to do better. Also, what's not been commented on is Cech was really poor for that goal. If you look from the angle from behind Rooney, Cech is the complete, he's not in the middle of the goal. He's so far over. He's got his angle so wrong. And people go, oh, but it went in the top corner. But it went absolutely nowhere near the top corner. Where it hits the net, it looks like it goes in the top corner. But the net is 3 yards long. So where it actually crossed the line, if you saw that on goal line technology, it was, it wasn't in the corner at all, and I would expect the keeper to save that. As I said, it looked good because Cech was out of position, and where it hit the net looked good. But the moment where it actually went in the goal, as I said, if you look for like a goal line technology point of view, it was sort of 2 yards below the crossbar and 3 yards in from the post. That should be saved all day, every day. But the main mistake is with Xhaka.
Who was your man of the match?
Oh, if anyone watches that game and doesn't think Ozil was a man of the match, stop watching football, give up, take up ballet or something.
He was good. He was good, wasn't he? From the first 10 minutes, I could see just the chances he was creating, and I thought to myself at half time, he's probably gone into the shed and thought, how haven't I got 3 assists already? Like he was good.
Yeah, I mean, I had fans behind me. As he's a bit of a whipping boy at the moment, as everyone knows. And like, I think the first time he gave the ball away was probably in about the 10th or 15th minute, and people were like, "Oh, Ozil again!" And I'm like, "Are you having an absolute laugh?" Like, it's one of them. He could do 100 things right, do one thing wrong, and it's the one thing that gets picked up on.
Yeah. Haters are going to hate, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay, Carl. Let's go to you, mate. Some questions. We'll start with the lineup and then go through it.
Okay, so I thought this lineup was the best one I think we've had all season. I have a gripe with Xhaka, but I'm going to get onto that later. But the front three were amazing. Obviously, already mentioned the first 10 minutes were amazing.
Yeah.
Lacazette seemed a lot more lively, trying to get in behind a lot more today, and it showed. Obviously, he had that goal today, true poacher's goal. The front three on the counter attack, when you see it on the highlights or whatever, it looked really potent, really intimidating to the Everton defence. I mean, they were all over the place, but still, regardless, they were really good yesterday. I think Bellerin had a good game again. Probably not many people are going to talk about him, but he had a good game. He's been on good form lately. I still think that crossing needs to improve quite a bit. Nacho Monreal had a great game today. He got us back into the game. That started the ball rolling. Pun not intended. I was going to go on to the problem I have with Xhaka, though. And it's the fact I'm kind of over what happened with the first goal, but it's the way he receives the ball which annoys me. That I saw in that game a fair few times where the way he received the ball, it was like he had his back to the play. And obviously, seeing the way that Cazorla used to play, he always used to get the ball on the turn, used to envisage two passes or two moves ahead. Xhaka just gets the ball and then processes what he has to do with it while he's getting pressed. And I think that's one area of his game he really needs to improve.
Yeah, I noticed that a couple of times myself, and I think I know a couple of, when you're talking about it too, because it's something that he can get out of his game, though. Okay, Savvy, you did the ratings as well, buddy. So we'll jump to that. So you give. So I'm just looking through it, so you can follow it at the. Clockend.blog, and you can check Savvy's ratings and comment if you don't agree. We're happy for it. So you stick by what you said there, mate?
Yeah, I stick by that.
You've got... And what was your thoughts on Xhaka? You give him a 6.5?
Yeah, I think it was a mistake by him. But largely, it was a good performance. His passing was good. He was very unlucky with a few of his shots. I think one hit the post and one eventually fell to Monreal, for which we scored the equalizer. And otherwise, I think, he's sometimes too slow to react. And sometimes he, as Carl said, he puts his back to the play, which is really something he can take out of his game. And it has cost us quite a few times this season, so it is something he can improve upon. But one thing more, I think sometimes I don't know if it's our tactics or it's Ramsey's positioning, but sometimes you can see when we have the possession, Ramsey's bombing forward and Xhaka doesn't have a partner to pass. So I think that also that is also a reason why that keeps happening. But I don't know if it's our tactics, because even when Elneny is playing, he does the same. So I don't know if it's our tactics or it's positioning. But overall, I think we had a great game. One player I want to point out, I think Kolasinac, he didn't have a very good game defensively. Attacking-wise, I think he had a good game. But certainly he can improve upon his positioning defensively. And then everybody know Ozil. I think he ran the game. He was absolutely unplayable.
Mm.
And then the front three, they showed us what they can do together. Was brilliant. And I think Lacazette was... I think he should have had more goals. The one chance where Ramsey put him through, I think Pickford came out and saved. I think he should have scored that. And otherwise, Alexis Sanchez, I think he was brilliant. Could have had more goals. And yeah, others, I think everybody had a good game. I can say he cost us the second goal because it's Monreal's mistake as well. But Cech, I think, tried to be too clever there. And he was trying to, I don't know what he was trying to do.
Mm.
And he cost us the goal. And then, though it was a very poor back pass by Monreal, but Cech could have cleared that first time. Otherwise, it was a very, very, very good performance. I think best attacking performance of the season.
There was, and you were generous at giving Cech a six, and I'm not going to criticise it, but he would have got about a four for me because he was woeful. He really was.
Yeah, he was. He was.
There was a couple of things, and I think I mentioned, what the fuck are you doing? Like, for a goalkeeper of his experience and his calibre, I thought, what are you doing? I don't know whether it's an age thing or I don't know. I'm not sure. But anyway, we'll go to Schwinn. How are you, mate?
Not too bad. How about yourself?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. So, what was your thoughts on the game overall, mate?
I think everyone who spoke before me touched upon the different elements of the game. Good start, quick movement, flair in the passing. I think we created four chances, maybe a half chance added to that within the first 12 minutes till time we conceded. As the game went, we grew in, we scored, we capitalized, and of course we walked away with the result. But what really bothers me are the two goals. Mm. Away from home, against a weak team, struggling for confidence. We started the game so bright. The crowd's on its toes, and we carving these chances. Ozil opens up the game for Ramsey, who just shoots wide, or I think it was saved wide. And we had so many good chances. And as soon as Wayne Rooney gets the ball, Mertesacker starts dropping off. He starts giving him space. He starts giving him time to think about what he needs to do. Just shut off the man. He's 33 years old. I know so are you, but you're not going to let him go away. You're not going to let him run away if you're close enough to him. Don't give that man, space and time on the ball. And there we go. We conceded. And at that moment, I was like, I'm not going to watch this game for the next 10 minutes because I was so mad at what was happening. So having conceded those two goals really bothers me. The second one was even worse, just by the way of, what happened. Maybe the sun got in Cech's eyes. I think we should give him the benefit of the doubt a little bit. There was a little bit of miscommunication as well, so we can discount that. But in another game where we're probably not two goals ahead, that sort of a mistake can cost us. So overall, the performance was very good, very convincing. Of course, we can pinpoint some mistakes, as you guys did, with some individual performances. But those two goals are still bothering me, even as, we discussed the game in its aftermath today.
No disrespect to Everton, but Pickford, he was a wall that first half, and it was obviously the back line, the 5-2 reflection on his performance. But he did all right for Everton as a goalkeeper. Would he be somebody you'd like at Arsenal next season?
I'm not sure. First of all, I'm not even sure if Cech's going to be gone. I think there are a lot of assumptions going around that Jack Butland is being scouted and, we have our eyes on some goalkeepers. Yeah. I'm not discounting that. But I don't think Cech's going to be gone after this season. I think he'll still be on number one choice. Of course, barring some injury that really threatens him. I don't think he's going to be gone. I think we'll still have him around.
Should we consider Pickford? Absolutely. I think he showed his quality yesterday. He's got some decent distribution skills as well. The wind on Merseyside was not kind to him yesterday. But I think he's definitely got quality, and he shows a lot of promise. But next summer, I'm not sure whether Arsenal are going to be in the window for a goalkeeper, essentially.
Yeah, well, I hope they are. So I just think Cech's he's just getting a little bit too old in the tooth, and I think we've got to try and start, if not January, you know, next summer, we've got to start pushing for a new keeper there. Now, just on the back of, as we're on the back of this win, 5-2 on Arsenal, it's just been news that Koeman has been given the sack by Everton. So Everton haven't got a manager at the moment. Tony, what's your thoughts on Koeman leaving, well, but getting the sack, and any thoughts on replacements coming in for there?
Yeah, just quickly before, just on Shrimp saying about the wind on Merseyside, there was literally no wind on Merseyside. The problem with Pickford is he can kick the ball a mile, but it could literally go anywhere. It's still an improvement on Cech being able to kick the ball anywhere and only about 20 yards. But the wind is not an excuse. He's a good shot stopper, but his distribution's awful. Koeman, yeah, it had the whole place had the air of he was gone if they lost, and especially in the fashion that they lost. The Everton fans have given up pretty much. They were more interested in trying to have a go at the Arsenal fans and Arsenal players and kept moaning about Sanchez and actually the game, because they were pretty much resigned to losing. I mean, at the final whistle, there was no one there. It was like you could see the whole place was you could see he was going to go. Well, the fans wanted him gone anyway. Replacements is difficult. It's always difficult, like sort of within the first few hours, because the press will link absolutely anyone just to try and get a story out there. And try and be different. Moyes has gone in as the bookie's favourite. Again, the substance of that is because he done well there before, but what was it, 4 or 5 years ago now? Different owner. Well, I mean, obviously Ken Wright's still there, but. Yeah, so it's a difficult one. I said Moyes is a favourite. Dyche is the second or third favourite with the bookies. But, I mean, he's doing a very good job at Burnley, so he seems to be the favourite for every job, or in the top three for every job that goes around at the moment. He was, at one point, he was the favourite for Leicester. He probably still is in and around the favourite for Leicester. Now he's in and around the favourite for Everton. I mean, it's difficult. In all honesty, I don't particularly care. It's Everton. I don't care that... They're a decent team, but they're not really going to... They're not, like, a challenge to us in terms of they won't finish above us. So, like...
It is what it is.
I don't care.
Yeah. And you were at the ground yesterday, so I'd just like to touch on Lacazette, because I've seen it a few times where he seemed to be running into holes and looking for that ball, but he just never got it.
It's difficult with him, because I've touched on this before. He mixes it up, and it seems like he does it sort of on a whim. So he just decides, I'm going to go in behind this time. I'm going to go short this time, which makes it very difficult for the players with the ball, because you have to actually wait and look. You can't, like, say with, I don't know, using Van Persie as an example. Every time Song got the ball, Van Persie peeled in behind, and they scored quite a few goals where Song pulled it in behind and Van Persie scored some volleys or just got onto the ball. With Giroud, you know he's not going to run in behind because he hasn't got that pace, so you don't need to take that half a second to look and see where he's going. Whereas Lacazette keeps mixing it up, the players actually have to look at him and see what he's doing. And if he does run in behind, by the time they've seen that, chances are he's going to be offside. So then they can't play that ball. So it looks like he's in a load of space, and you think, oh, why hasn't that ball been played? But and unless he starts keeping doing the same thing consistently, it's going to be very difficult for anyone. As I said, Ozil played unbelievable yesterday, but not once did he slide Lacazette in. And as you said, Lacazette made the runs.
Yeah, I've seen him making the runs, yeah.
I didn't mean to cut that. But as I said, it's difficult because he keeps coming in short. Sometimes he runs channels. Sometimes he runs in to go behind towards the goal. And maybe it's a relationship thing, but I think he's going to have to be more consistent in... I'm not saying only do one type of thing, but he's going to have to choose one style and do that, say, 70% of the time for that understanding. And then occasionally he will come short, which is the 30%, and the ball go in behind and people will moan. But, I mean, that's going to happen. But you can't build an understanding with someone who sort of seems to just make the decisions in the moment.
Yep.
I think that's happening and then seeing the runs and just thinking, no, I can't be bothered to pass it to him.
Do you think it'll get better as time goes on?
Yeah, I think they'll get a better understanding with him. Or, as I said, someone's got to, maybe they already have, but someone's got to tell him, like, it's very difficult to link up with someone who you don't know what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's also very hard to defend against, because you've got the centre-backs on him. They don't know whether to go short with him or if he's going to spin in behind or if he's going to go to the channel, so they lead him to the full-back. It's very difficult for the defender to know what to do, but at the same time, it's very difficult for our players.
Yeah. Carl, yesterday, Sanchez and Ozil, mate, they were outstanding. I worry about how we're going to go about replacing, and I hope we don't have to replace both of them, but how are we going to replace either of them? Because we really need them quality players.
Answer is, I'm not the Oracle, so I don't know how the hell we're going to replace them. They are both amazing players. Ozil had one of the matches of his life yesterday. Mm. He's dictating play everywhere. I don't know. It's just the fact that he doesn't do it on a consistent basis. Give me like a central attacking midfielder that does performances like that on a consistent basis. A, he might cost upwards of 100 million, but B, yes, we'll get him. But I just can't see that at the moment. It's going to be really hard, really difficult to replace Ozil. Sanchez, on the other hand, I think it'll be relatively easier to replace him. Obviously, the names you always drop, Lamar, Draxler, even Mahrez, even though I don't think he should be part of the conversation.
I'd rather a Mahrez than a Lamar or Draxler.
I'd rather have Draxler. Draxler would be my vote.
Yeah, okay. I just think Mahrez offers a lot more. Like, and I watched he play against with Leicester on the weekend, and just the sheer skill. And he's Premier League proven for me. Where Draxler and Lamar, it just like Lamar's not even. He's playing like a busted ass this season, isn't he? Like, he's done nothing, and for 100 million, I think. I'd rather 40 million on Mahrez.
Well, this is the thing. Like, you can see with Lamar and even with Mahrez at the start of the season, you can see the effect of not having your heart into the team on your performance.
Mm.
Thomas Lamar clearly could wanted out during the summer and he didn't get it, so he's been playing piss poor this season.
Mm-hmm.
The same with Sanchez, but Sanchez, on the other hand, he doesn't want to be at Arsenal, but he's still putting in good performances. Like, obviously, you want a player that's going to want to play for your team and that's going to be a good technical player. That's the perfect matchup. And as long as we get that, then it'll be pucker.
Mm-hmm. What's your take on it, Savvy? How do we replace them and who do we replace them with?
Yeah, Ozil, I still feel and I want that he signs on. He doesn't leave us, no? I'm still keeping my money on that. On Sanchez, my replacements would be not so familiar. Yeah, some are familiar. I think I would go with Dries Mertens, Lorenzo Insigne, or maybe Fakir from Olympique Lyon. Because with Sanchez, we need him to replace him with a player who can score goals.
Mm.
So these are some players who can, in my opinion, can score goals from the position where Sanchez play. And Ozil, I think there aren't many players in the world who can do the stuff that he can do. So even if we have to replace him, I would go with maybe Draxler or you can say, I really don't see many players similar to him. Maybe Forsberg from RB Leipzig. But still, I think nobody can match what Ozil can do on his day. I know there is inconsistency associated with him, but everybody will agree his vision is unmatched. I think I can only see Kevin De Bruyne with similar vision, or Cesc Fabregas when he was on top. Otherwise, I don't see any player who can match his vision. Yeah, Santi Cazorla at our club. Otherwise, I don't see many players who can match that. So, Ozil, as Carl said, I think he will be the difficult one to replace. And I still hope he signs on. And Sanchez, I think we can replace him. And he's bound to go. So, I really hope we get a replacement in January. Because in summer, it will be very difficult to replace him. Because of the reasons we have already discussed before.
Schwinn, I'll get your take on it, mate, because I don't think I've asked you this question. So, even talking to me on Twitter and whatnot, mate, what's your thoughts on it all?
It's going to be extremely hard, isn't it? I mean, just thinking about it and hearing you guys talk is giving me the sweats. I mean, Alexis is someone who has an incredible output. I mean, he's extremely frustrating to watch as an Arsenal fan when he's giving away the ball and, you know, maybe throwing a fit on the pitch. But his out, you cannot argue with his numbers. And on the other hand, Ozil is someone who might not produce the numbers, but when you watch him play, it's Christmas. It's so beautiful just to, you know, see him slalom through the field and make space for others. Those are things that don't get recorded in stats, perhaps, you know, or a hockey assist when your pass leads to an assist. You know, that sort of stuff doesn't happen and it's not recorded. So it's going to be extremely hard to replace them. I don't think Ozil is going to leave. I think I'm in accordance with you guys on that. Sanchez, on the other hand, is going to be a tall order, pun not intended. But I don't know. I don't know who's going to be able to take up the mantle. I mean, of course, my American blood tells me to sign Pulisic, but again, that's by no means rational. And I'm thrown into a spiral when someone asks me that question. I don't have an answer for them.
Just that, because we've got to, look, and I'm talking, if we've got to replace Cech, Ozil, Sanchez, you know, there's a few bucks there. Do we look at Iwobi or Wilshere to step in?
Most definitely. I think if we can find homegrown talent to take up the space, take up the position, maybe change the system if that's what's required. That's the best. I'm a strong advocate for less transfer activity. I don't like too many ins and outs. So I like to keep the core of the squad together. And if that core of the squad has homegrown players, people who know what it means to put on that Arsenal shirt, then by all means, give them the chance. Let them have a crack for a season or half a season. See what they have in their locker.
Yep. Tony, you get final say on it, mate. On the subject, what's your thoughts on it all, mate?
On terms of replacements, it's difficult. I mean, some of the names you've mentioned, or obviously everyone's mentioned, I know, obviously, I bang on about Mahrez all the time, and I rate Mahrez, but he can't be a replacement for Sanchez because he can't play on the left. So he may be a similar type of player, but he can't take up that role. Lamar's not got the goal threat Sanchez has. And then on the similarly, someone said Draxler to replace Ozil. Again, it could happen, but it would mean completely changing your style. And also, at the moment, Ozil's playing sort of on the right of the two behind the striker, and Draxler can't play on that side. We're either going to have to change style, or which is obviously one option, or if you're looking for light replacements, we're going to have to be a bit cleverer with it. I think the one that Savvy mentioned, and he would have my vote for it, but he's not really ever been linked in the press, is Dries Mertens. The guy scores goals for fun. He creates chances for fun. His numbers are an absolute joke. He's not got that sort of... He's not known as a world beater, so the fee wouldn't be as high as it would for a Lamar. He's just not got that tag for some reason. I don't really know why, but he hasn't. In terms of if it could come internal, don't get me started on Alex Iwobi. It's not going to happen. obviously, there's potential for Jack. It's not his best position, but there's potential for Jack to play there. He's played there a few times this season. When he came on in the Sanchez role. I mean, again, you lose goals, clearly, but then you gain control of the ball, because probably Sanchez's biggest fault is how wasteful he is.
Yeah.
And that's one of Jack's strength. So you could replace the goals in other ways, or maybe wouldn't need so many goals to win games because you control the ball a lot better. So, I mean, that, I think at the moment that's the only internal solution. I don't see it as ideal, but it's something. I mean, I wouldn't have that as the plan for the season. If Sanchez was to get injured now, I don't think it's a bad option for a few games, but I wouldn't have that as the, this is what our strongest selection is. But saying that, a few years ago, Jack was playing in that role and done very well. I remember we beat Swansea away 2-1, Gnabry scored, and Ramsey scored, and Jack played in that role then. And I mean, I've picked that game because it's come to mind, but around that time he was playing in that role. Mm. And we was on sort of a good run at the time. But as I said, I don't think that should be the plan. I think that should be an option.
One name that has keeps coming up in the press is Real Madrid, Isco.
Never going to happen.
Never.
I just thought I'd throw it out there because it keeps getting mentioned in the press. So.
Well, we might as well ask them to give us the Bernabeu on loan.
Okay. Well, let's hope we keep one, and I'd like to keep Ozil, and we all know Sanchez is going to go. Who will replace him? Who knows? But we'll find out next year, I suppose. Okay, let's. We played a Europa League game during the week against Red Star. Carl, you didn't happen to see the game, but you caught a little bit of it, mate.
Yep. I heard I heard it was an alright performance. We're a bit under the cosh for a few periods where they had a few shots on goal, but ended a decent performance. Giroud comes up trumps when we need him to be.
What a goal, eh?
Yeah, great goal. Wilshere being the magician, what a surprise. even commendation to Walcott. I mean, he was involved in that play. Mm. Great 1-2 with Wilshere, setting up Giroud. Ultimately, but Giroud's just, I don't know what he is. It's him and great goals, better love story than Twilight. You know,
I read a tweet that Giroud would show his 100 goals to his young bloke, and anyone would think he's a Messi or something. I had a bit of a cackle at that. Savvy, you caught the game, mate.
Yeah, I watched the game. I think. We were. It was, first of all, it was nice to see Debuchy after a few years. He has hardly played for us, and then I think Wilshere was brilliant. Willock, I know Carl won't agree. He had a good game for me, and then we look at. I think Theo, as usual, was wasteful, and then he suddenly came up with the good assist. Mm-hmm. Then Giroud, I think he was not having having a good game, Olivier Giroud, but he popped up with a goal when it mattered. And Jack Wilshere, I think he was unplayable, as usual. It has been in Europa League this season. And I think Cech, I think he kept us in the game. He was very good on that day. Otherwise, yeah, it was Elneny looked good in centre-back position. Holding out a good performance.
Just what was that all about? I've seen that Elneny is in the centre back. That was obviously the plan the whole time because he was playing the pre-season in them games. So
yeah,
how did he go? He went all right, did he?
Yeah, he was. He made the very good last ditch tackle, but then he almost cost us a goal. So it was a mixed performance, but overall he did well.
Yeah,
and I think the atmosphere was very, very good. You can even see that on the TV. I can imagine the people who travelled, they would have had a very good time because the atmosphere was just very, very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice to come away with a win because I would have taken the draw, judging by the atmosphere and the chances they were also creating because they went to 10 man and then we eventually scored. But these 3 points... will see us through to from the group stages. So it was a good performance.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Schwinn, you caught the game, mate?
I did, and I actually thought it was piss poor. I thought our performance was in the dumps.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the only good thing about the whole 90 minutes was the goal. That was the only thing that made it worth watching. I mean, we're going away to play against Red Star Belgrade. I know the atmosphere is going to be daunting. I know the tunnel is going to be daunting, and, you know, it's loud and it's buzzing, and, you know, players are going to turn up. But come on. I mean, we need to be able to walk away from such games, despite us playing our second team, if you will, with ease. We don't. We shouldn't require the other team to go down a goal. And let's not forget, go down a man. And let's not forget, that goal was outrageous. We should be walking it into the net.
Yeah, it was a crazy goal.
We shouldn't be relying on goals like that. You know, don't get me wrong. I am being hypocritical here. That goal was fantastic. But we shouldn't be requiring that sort of an output to win that game. I just thought that we should have done much better. Yes, we played some, you know, younger players. Yes, we played Debussy after a while. But what if that game costed us? You know, what if it was a draw? And what if it was a loss? In terms of confidence, that really sets you back. Maybe not in terms of your position on the table. But in terms of confidence, it does. Yes, Jack was fantastic. It's great to see him finish those 90 minutes. And it will help when it comes to, you know, the game against Norwich and other Europa League games. But I think we need to be performing better when it comes to these games. And we need these players to be challenging for, you know, the first team. And there is a big gap right now in these two squads, I feel.
Royce Nelson, how did he perform?
He was good.
He was confident.
He was good, yeah.
Always looking to take players on. He's I like how he walks up to his defender, and then he does a shimmy here or two, and then he's got quick feet, so he's got the confidence to get away from players. I think he can still work on his delivery a little bit in terms of getting balls into the box. But even in his own half, he's very confident defensively. He's patient. He'll look for the right lane to thread the ball into. So he's definitely an intelligent player, and he's got a lot of potential.
Definitely one for the future. Tony, off you go, mate. What was you obviously watched the game because you didn't go to it, so you had to watch it on TV again, mate.
Yeah, I know, it's horrible. This I was having to listen to Stuart Robson, which is a crime in itself. I was talking about him. I don't care about him. To be honest, we wasn't awful. The game was awful. There was not much in it, but we got the 3 points. I mean, I've been saying pretty much every single podcast when we spoke about it, Europa League, just do enough to get through, play players that are on the fringes. So Cockerling got his minutes coming back, his first minutes since his injury.
Yep.
Obviously, a few youngsters got minutes again. Nelson, we look at, as you've mentioned. Holding's getting more minutes and more experience, which is what I've said the whole time the competition should be about. I've always said that get through the groups and then reassess in February, look at the position where we are in the league, how we're doing in the cups, and then you can see if you're really going to go for it and start playing the first team. And that's exactly what Wenger's done. The goal was stupid good, as you've all touched on. Again, it came from Jack breaking lines, which, I mean, people say putting the ball in the net is the hardest thing in football. For me personally, I think breaking lines is. You can name a lot of goal scorers, but not a lot of people that can break lines. I'd say, I mean, just to stop people arguing with that, like the England national team, people are already calling for Jack to be back in it because he breaks lines, but you can name Kane, Rashford, Sterling, blah, 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 who have scored goals. So it shows that job is ridiculously hard to do, and Jack's very good at it. The performance as a whole, it's not much in it.
Can everybody stop talking positive about Jack? Because every time somebody talks positive about him, something fucking happens. So just let's calm down, people, and let's just hope he gets through the season.
that is my one worry with him, that obviously, as a self-confessed number one fan, I think we are, as a club or as a fan base, building him up too much as if he's some kind of, like, everything's going to be all right as long as Jack's involved. So I think we are building him up too much. But one thing I would actually like to say, because I don't know, it wasn't shown on UK TV, and I don't know if it was shown on TV around the world, that if anyone ever wonders why the fans, especially the match-going fans, love Jack so much, after the game yesterday, a pitch invader ran on just to, like, talk to him. And
I saw that.
As, like, four stewards came and picked him up to the pitch invader, not Jack. to get him off the pitch. Jack ran over, gave him a shirt. The steward tried to take the shirt off the fan, and Jack made sure the fan got it.
Wow.
It's something so petty, and it is so small. But as a match-going fan, you think, yes, he understands that we've travelled however many miles. We're seriously hungover on a Sunday morning watching this game.
Yeah.
And the club will probably frown upon that. They'll probably go, look, he's broke the rules. He's a pitch invader. He shouldn't be there. But as a fan, as I said, it's so petty, but they're the kind of things that, like, he understands what it's like to sort of sit in the terraces or sit in the stands on a cold day in Liverpool.
No, that's great, because that's what football's about, and reaching out to fans. So, and it's good to see him do that, and I'd like to see more of it. So, Carl, you'd be happy, though, because I just had a quick look at the ratings of that game. And young Willock got a 6.9. Apparently, he was the worst player on the field. I didn't see the game, so I can't really judge it.
Excellent.
So, yeah, I thought you might like that. They say man of the match was Walcott. Wilshere was good as well as Giroud. So basically, takes us to Europa League, top of the table on 9 points, and a few games to go. I think we'll win the group, and like you said, Tony, we'll assess in January and see where we are and see whether we go for it. A lot of people were saying we should go for it now and play our best team, because I think that was last week after the Watford loss, and it's always a bit of a downer after a loss, but everybody was so down that we've got to go and try and win Europa League to get back into the Champions League. So
if we can win the group playing our 9-year-old girls team, then do it. Like, I'm absolutely not disrespecting the competition and saying completely throw it. We're still winning the group. Like, we're one, I think, I'm not sure on how the maths work out. A commentator said, I think he might be wrong, that we can win the group next time out. Actually, no, he isn't wrong, because Belgrade is second. Yeah. If we win at home next time out, we've won the group with 2 games to spare.
Yeah.
And we've not wasted a player that's going to play a first team minute from the start. Mm. So, as I said, everyone loves criticising Wenger, but I think it's been excellent management.
Mm-hmm. No, I think he's done it well, and he's got them fringe players on. And why would you put in it? You know, I know Sanchez played 1 game, didn't he? But that was when he was coming back from injury. Yeah, so
he played against Cologne, then it was his first game back.
Yeah. So, you know, and he's bringing them players I think it's a smart move by Wenger. Okay, guys. So we've got now just. Remind me what this EFL Cup's called again?
The Carabao Cup.
That one. So we've got a game coming up this week against Norwich City. Carl, what's your take on this, mate?
On paper, it looks like an easy game, but I think we're going to come up with some issues, because obviously it's one of the later rounds of the Carabao Cup. So I think we definitely can't underestimate Norwich, but if we put out the right calibre of players, we should be able to, you know, we should be able to get the win, which means not playing Willock. We can play him. Maybe might be a good sign of actually playing Debussy 2 cup games in a row, because he is on 70k a week. You know,
make him earn his money, you reckon?
Yeah, man, I was like, I don't know how many million pound house where he used to sit for about 6 months before getting on the field this week.
Are we taking this cup serious? Is it a cup?
I mean,
it's a cup, but is it a tin cup? Is it a fucking cup where we want to win?
I don't know. They treat it like a tin cup with the amount of names they call it. I don't know what it's going to be called next season.
Yeah, I
don't know, like the Freddo Cup or something. we should take it seriously. It is a cup at the end of the day. If we win it, then you know, fair play. But until we get to at least like the quarters, keep on playing the boys. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Savvy, what's your take on it, mate? Norwich City.
Yeah, I think Wenger has never taken League Cup seriously, and I don't think he will be taking this time. He will be giving youngsters a run out, and I have heard that we'll play a very young team against Norwich. We are at home. I think we will be able to win, and it's League Cup is always a cup where youngsters play, they get a run out, and we can see who is better and who can make it to the first team. So I think it will be used as usual for that only this year round also.
Right, I'm not going to spend too much on this bloody piss fucking cup thing. So, Schwinn, give us a quick prediction, mate.
2-1 Arsenal.
2-1 Arsenal. Righto. Okay.
Answer Carl's question. Next season, I think it's going to be called Two Girls, One Cup.
I think we just moved into rated R territory from E.
Okay, so you know, now you've lost me where I'm up to. Okay, so we've got now we're not going to be recording until next Monday, so we've got a Premier League coming up game against Swansea City. Tony, what's your predictions on that one, mate?
10-0. I think we'll be going same lineup as yesterday, if fitness allows. As I said, he sees that as our strongest team at the moment with the players available. So I can't see any reason why you would change that, especially after the result. It's going to be difficult there. They're a hard side to break down. They're actually, at the moment, they're worse at home because they actually try and play at home, whereas when they go away, they shut up shop. Mm. And they're not too bad at it. I mean, they got a draw away at Tottenham. They're not bad at the back, and especially when they're all focused on defending, they'll aim to hit Abraham Long, who's athletic, strong, quick, tall, and hold up. I mean, we really shouldn't be worried about a defeat. They shouldn't be creating many opportunities against us. But it's all about breaking them down. If you do that early, then it could be an easy afternoon's work. But if you get into the sort of half hour, 40 minutes without scoring, especially us, we tend to get frustrated. And it could be a very long day.
Mm-hmm. Schwinn, we'll go to you, mate. Swansea.
Yeah, everything Tony said, spot on. I do think we should walk away with the win comfortably. It's going to be challenging in the opening few minutes, but if you're able to get an early goal, I think that's going to open up the game a little bit and force them to play out a little more. So we should go at them full throttle from the onset and secure an early lead to make sure that we don't get into a rut.
Well, just looking back at the last year, 15th January, we beat them 4-0. We were away, yeah, though, and then back in October 16, it was 3-2. So they probably did what... I'm trying to remember the game, actually, but yeah.
We went down to 10 men. Xhaka got sent off. Ozil scored a ridiculous volley, and Walcott scored two.
Okay, there you go. Thanks, Mike. Oh, yeah, Walcott got two. Yep. Okay, so we'll go to some... We've got some questions from some followers, so I'll just... Quickly, though, we'll go right round everybody because this one was an interesting one that come from Vish during the week. How about a podcast on a list of ideal players transfers to make Arsenal a serial Premier League and Champions League winners? So basically, I think what he's getting at, Tony, is let's get right down to... maybe bring in 10 players to make... I was reading the question. I was thinking about it for a couple of days and I thought, yeah, like, you go, mate. What's your take on it? Did you see the question?
Yeah, I saw it and you've kind of stolen my answer in that there's no point. It's not fantasy football. It's not FIFA where you can just go and sign whoever you want and become serial contenders. The first answer is Wenger. You're not going to be a serial challenger on multiple fronts with him in charge. As I said, just again, I'm not saying he's a bad manager. I just think it's too stale for competitiveness. But yeah, I think it's just one of them questions that anyone can come and say, if we had Ronaldo and Messi behind Harry Kane, and then in goal we had De Gea, then yeah, we would be serial contenders. But again, this isn't fantasy football, so there is no point in answering that question. And I don't mean to belittle the user who asked it, but it's one of them. It's
hard.
I mean, I'd prefer to.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
It's not hard. I can tell you, man. Yeah.
Find De Gea, Marcello, Ramos, and whoever else, and we'd be contenders. But
yeah,
I'd rather be realistic.
Yeah. Okay, let's change it a little bit and let's be realistic. Where do we need to build to make us contenders? around the team we've got?
I think, so, I mean, look, without City this year, I've gone to a different level. But before then, I think 1 to 11, we was probably as strong as anyone else. It was just sort of mentality and consistency and the squad. The players that came in were good. They were very good squad players, but they weren't up to the same caliber as the starting 11. So it's difficult. One of the hardest things in football is to find players that are good but willing to sit on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem we're going to find. That, again, this will cause arguments. You're not going to win much with Hector Bellerin in the team. He just gives away too much and wastes the ball too much. And I've said this a few weeks ago and I got absolutely hammered. And he's proved it ever since. Kolasinac needs to fix up his ideas. I said it against Brighton 3 weeks ago and everyone hammered me. I tweeted it at half time and got told I didn't know what I was talking about. He was then poorer at Watford. And yesterday, he wasn't poor yesterday. He was anonymous, is what he was. Like, he just wasn't in the game. I think he relies on his strength too much. He is very strong. But I mean, it's hard to tell. I'm not saying you can't win anything with him in the team because we just don't know yet. But I think people are still giving him a free ride because he's new and he was good for the first two or three games. But he does need to fix up his ideas because at the moment he's not been as pivotal as we hoped. The back three, we need to improve more due to age than anything else. I think people don't like Nacho because of the idea that he's just moved to centre back. But when you actually look at the performances, it's clear to see he's actually been very good in pretty much every game.
Just on Monreal, to give people an idea, where do you rate him amongst other, compared to other players in his position in other teams?
What's difficult is it's a sort of new role, and I think Chelsea kind of invented it, to give Conte some credit, where it's a centre-back, but it's not really. It's the one that comes out with the ball, that's very good at football, that can get up and down, which usually isn't what you look for in a centre-back. But it's essentially the spare man is what the role is. And Chelsea pretty much invented it with Azpilicueta. But you see it's something that's being done more and more, that when teams play a back three, especially attacking teams, they play a back three, but one of them is either an ex-fullback or a centre midfielder. Yep. So it's someone that can strike the midfield, can play the ball. And I think Monreal's as good as anyone. I put him on sort of, I really rate Cesar Azpilicueta at Chelsea, and I think Monreal's sort of on a par with him. Very dependable, but not spectacular. Ironically, they both scored this weekend. But I think Monreal's on that sort of level, but there's not a massive pool of players to compare him to, because you can't say, oh, he's similar to, I don't know, John Stones, who may occasionally play that role for Man City, play in the back three for Man City, because it's a completely different role.
Yep. Yeah.
But I think a lot of people don't rate him because they think of a traditional centre-back, and Monreal definitely isn't that. And then they see him playing in a back three and they're like, oh, he's not a centre-back. What's he doing? Why are Arsenal playing him there? But I think in this back three for an attacking team, be it us, be it Chelsea, be it City, when they play, you have to have one of them that is more adventurous and isn't an out-and-out defender or an out-and-out centre-back.
Mm-hmm. Carl, what's your... And we'll get back to this, Vish. And, mate, we really appreciate you guys sending us the comments and stuff, but it's just hard to say, let's move 10 players to make us competitive. So I'll change it a little bit, Carl, and I'll go around the table to all of you, so you all have a bit of an input. Where do we improve to make us a contender?
Midfield, definitely in midfield, hands down. So
you're getting rid of Xhaka?
If he keeps on playing like that, yes.
Kicked off the fucking podcast, mate. You're gone.
Excuse me, you can get on the rocks.
Go on, I'll let you talk.
if this was fantasy, I'd be getting Casemiro and telling him to come to London Heathrow. I'd love him in our team. Every time I see Real Madrid play, he's pretty much the pivotal player in that team. Forget Ronaldo, forget Modric, forget all of them. Casemiro is the main player in that team, in my opinion. But we also need to improve centre-back, get a young centre-back in. I know we're talking about age, so maybe someone like a Manolas or a... People say Virgil van Dijk. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't know how good that Jimenez is from Atletico Madrid. He's young, but those are two areas you really need to consolidate, but we can't really say too many areas because We've seen it with Tottenham back in the day where they had their Gareth Bale money and they literally spent it on everyone they could find.
Mm.
And now with Everton this summer, you don't want to be spending on money on too many players. I think Schwinn mentioned it earlier about trying to keep the core in the team. Mm. So, yeah, if you have to make three signings, obviously. So I'd say holding midfielder, centre-back, and perhaps either a goalie or... You know, the replacement for Sanchez, maybe like a, yeah, Drax or even like a Carrasco type character.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Savvy, same question, Mike.
Yeah, I agree with Carl. I think we need we don't need a central midfielder. I think we need a midfield destroyer. We have lacked that since long, and we don't have enough tacklers in midfield. So, yeah, central defensive midfielder and a centre-back is needed because we know Mertesacker is retiring at the end of the season. Koscielny is old. Mustafi, I know he stayed, but he probably wanted to leave. We already sold Gabriel. So, a centre-back. And then we have to think and we have to definitely replace Alexis Sanchez. So, I think these are the three positions we should be going all out in the summer.
Okay, so you keep Shaka, yeah. So you stay. Okay, Schwinn, what's your take on it, mate?
Wow, where do I even start? I think since you've asked this question, most of us have been focusing on the squad, on the personnel. And I think we need to sort of step back, and I think Tony touched upon this a little bit. We need to step back and see comprehensively what's going on. I mean, right down from the owner to the bench and to our youth academy as well. There's a lot wrong and a lot that needs to be fixed in order for us to compete at the highest level. I mean, the bench, for one, that's very important to have those impact players. I mean, all due respect to Welbeck and Walcott and, you know, the others who sit on the bench, but they are not good enough for us to challenge at the top. We can talk about our starting defenders and how some of them are getting old, how maybe some of them are not going to be reliable anymore. Our midfield, how it's just not there, how the Vieiras and the Gilberos and the Parlors are just not there. Those characters are not there.
Mm.
But more than anything, I think we need to have an identity. Wenger switched our system after a really long time. We've become very frail in midfield. That's always been one of our strengths. And all of a sudden, we have basically Xhaka, who is monitoring the midfield with Aaron, you know, making his runs, which we need.
Mm.
So it's more like it's a system where we need people to do certain things, but we might not have the right tools, or maybe they haven't reached that point where they will be the right tools.
Mm.
So I think there's a lot more to this question than meets the eye, and we could probably do a podcast on this, to be honest, just this question. So I'm not going to get too much into it, but I think there needs to be a massive overhaul of a lot of things at Arsenal Football Club in order for us to compete at the top.
Yeah, I'm just going to touch quickly. I think goalkeeper's obviously one replacement. I just, like I've said it earlier, checks past it. Centre back, I'd probably replace right back, and obviously you got to look at Sanchez's replacement. But I think I'm going in with this question as Sanchez is in the team this year, so to make us competitive now. So Sanchez, Ozil, they're there. I'm happy with Ramsey, Xhaka, Lacazette. I'm happy with Giroud coming off the bench. I know what you're saying, Schwinn, when you say Walcott. He's one of them players that he can come on and win you a game, and he can come on and, you know, play like a busted ass and lose you a game. So Jack Wilshere, I think he'll and without putting too much praise on him, I think he'll come good. Oh, he's good now, but, you know, hopefully he stays fit to be a really, really, really good class player. Would be a good dream come true for all us Arsenal fans, because he's had a bit of a long road. So, okay, you got any touch on that, Tony, or move on?
So, I mean, it's pretty much been covered. I don't think there's an answer to the actual question. Yeah. The Vishnu.
It's a hard one.
Okay, look, I'm happy to answer this one, boys, because it's my boy Shaka. Glenn Baxter, and I will get one more opinion because I'm good mates with Glenn. So, he said, am I the only person who thought Shaka had a decent game versus Everton? I saw a lot of hate online, and I actually think he wasn't that bad. Look, and I probably buckled under the pressure because I thought after that first goal, I thought, oh, fuck, Shaka, what are you doing? And talking to Savvy and Carl, I was like, oh, shit, you know. But then after the 90 minutes, I thought, and I watched it again today, I thought he had a pretty good game because he hit that ball and it hit the top of the post, and if that had gone in, you know, that... Well, he gets a goal. There was another one that Pickford hit back and Monreal scored. And that come off the back of Shaka's shot. So, in all, I thought he had a pretty good game. But like I said, I'm pretty biased on Shaka. So I will go to Tony, mate. What's your thoughts?
Obviously, as we've all touched upon the mistake for the first goal, and I think, especially when it's the first goal of the game, you're always going to sort of receive criticism because it's in people's mind.
He
wasn't as bad as people are making out, but I also disagree with Glenn saying he was pretty good. I just thought he was bang average, really. He gave some balls away that he shouldn't have done, not just for the goal. He had a few sloppy passes. It's not... I always say that a lot of people criticise him when he tries a ball that's difficult and gives it away, which you shouldn't criticise for that. But he had some passes that he should be completing. A player of his ability or anyone's ability should be completing that pass that he gave away. Mm. So there is some criticism there. But he wasn't as bad as people are making out. But I also wouldn't say he's good. I mean, as I said, he'd done some good things that went unnoticed. There was a few tackles he won on the edge of the box. I may be wrong, but I think Ozil's goal came from him winning a tackle on the edge of the box.
I'm trying to think now myself.
It was him that got Gay sent off. I mean, I know the tackle was on him, but
yeah,
he still had to be in the position and quick enough to get to that ball first. And you know, the moment you got to that ball first, that there's going to be a yellow card involved.
Mm-hmm.
In the ground, he was a bit... There was one or two tackles when it was 1-0 and they were pumped up and going for it. There was a few tackles that they were flying into and he didn't. And a lot of people were giving him stick for bottling it or pulling out of the challenge. But they were the same people that were giving him stick when he went in for them tackles last season and got sent off. It's a difficult one. I don't think he was good, but he wasn't as bad as people are making out. It's just the thing that sticks in your head because a goal came from it.
Is that one goal? Yeah.
I think if he would have lost that ball and Rooney would have put it wide, people would have sort of just been saying average performance. But as I said, that mistake sticks in your head because of it led to a goal.
Do you like him taking them big long shots?
I think there's a time and a place. He's quite good. I mean, we've had players in the past that just for the sake of it have done it. He's quite good at doing it at the right time. He doesn't have a million a game. He tends to only do it when there's not many options on. I think the first one, the one for Monreal's goal, he was kind of forced to because he was under such pressure that he couldn't have picked the pass, so he just hit it. But he had one ridiculous one after that where he was about a million yards out and it went stupidly wide. But usually decision-making with them is quite good, and that's what you need. I've got no issue with anyone shooting from distance as long as, one, the time's right, and two, obviously, if they know they've got the ability to do that, and he knows he's got the ability to do that in the same way that Sanchez knows he's got the ability to every now and then. Had it been sort of, I don't know, Ozil doing that, I'd been annoyed because he doesn't have the ability to score from 30, 35 yards just because of the way he caresses the ball rather than hammers it. As I said, it's just the decision making, but I think he's usually pretty good with that.
He hits a ball at some point. He smashes that ball too. Like, I'd like to be on the other end of it.
He's got a traction engine for a left foot. He can absolutely hammer it.
Yeah. Okay, Carl, we've got one for you, mate.
Okay.
And this one come from the Football Mole. Do you all rate Cech?
Yes and a little bit no. He's still a class goalkeeper. I don't know who. The question always comes is who would we replace him with that's his like caliber right now? Because that's the sort of keeper we need. Not necessarily right now do we need a keeper that's going to have the potential to be. We need one right now that's going to be at his level. And at the moment, I don't think there's very many that are. Mm. Yes, he has a few errors, and it's very frustrating. Like yesterday, he had a poor game yesterday, but the form we've been on, as he's been partly instrumental for that. He's barely put a foot wrong in the, you know, in the games that we've won or even drawn this season. He's made some ridiculous saves, and he's still good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. People, it's going to happen in all walks of life. People see like one thing that happened that's wrong, and suddenly they're going to bring up all the other things that he's done wrong in the past. So, I still think Cech's a good goalkeeper. I think Everton was a blip yesterday. Hopefully that we don't see that sort of performance again. He needs to fix up before the next game.
Oh, he's in my fantasy team. I'll be fixing him up for sure. 1 point, I think he got. Oh, fuck me, dead. Now, there's 10 comments under it, and I didn't think to look at all the comments under it. So I apologise if there was any questions under that tweet, but I type it just screenshot of the tweet, and I just noticed there's 10 comments under it. So, Savvy, it says all, so we'll ask your opinion on it as well, mate.
Yeah, so, yeah, I rate Cech. I think some of the things he does is shows how good a keeper he is. But definitely we need a replacement because he's getting old. His penalty record is awful for us. But if I look at some of the things and some of the games, like I know he had a very bad game at Everton, but he was very good at Red Star. So, and I think before that, when we were on a winning streak, I think he had some good games and made some crucial saves, which kept us in the game.
Mm.
And for a long time, we haven't had a goalkeeper who could. I think some his reflexes are good, but sometimes he commands the box very well, but sometimes his decision making puts him down. And which is the case with every Arsenal player. So can't really fault him. But right now he's our best keeper. So until we buy a replacement, we'll be playing him. So first we have to get the replacement. Then we have to think if he's better than him or not. So right now Cech is the number one for me.
Do we use somebody, one of our own next season? If Cech's not our number one, like Ospina's not going to be there, but who's on loan? Loan Martinez, is it?
Yeah, Martinez is on loan. I don't know. I haven't seen him perform this season. I haven't seen any of his matches.
No, I haven't.
But I hear he has got potential, but we really don't know, and we can't be making him number one just after a loan, and especially when you have Cech. Martinez doesn't come in and becomes the number one. So, I don't know. We need a replacement. We need to buy a new goalkeeper. Then only we can think of replacing Cech as our number one.
Yep. Okay, Schwinn, so I've got one for you, mate. And it's from Glenn again. Thanks, Glenn. So, it's been a lot of talk about Laka not being able to complete 90 minutes. My observation, he isn't surprised when he is subbed off. Surely it's planned.
What's the question? I mean, as a topic of conversation, I think Glenn observed something which is right, that he has been taken off consistently between the 67th and like what feels like the 75th minute. I've always been surprised to see that. I've always thought that that's been the case because Wenger wants to give Giroud some minutes and keep him happy. Yesterday, that was obviously not the case. And seeing Jack made me forget about everything else for the minute. I just wanted to enjoy the moment and enjoy seeing him play.
Yep.
But it is surprising. I'm not sure why that happens. I mean, strikers thrive in the last 10 minutes, especially when the other team is a goal down. And what's the harm with Lacazette getting another goal or possibly a hat trick? I think once he was even subbed off and he was two goals into the game, so he was already on a hat-trick when he was taken off earlier this season. I don't remember which game it was. But yeah, it is surprising. I'm not sure why. What's the rationale behind it? Is it just rotation? Is it stamina? That was something that was spoken about before the season started, about how he might not have that steam in him to keep him going for the 90 minutes. I don't think he's happy to be taken off. In fairness, no football player would be happy to be taken off. You know, even when they're injured, they want to keep playing, you know.
I'll put it this way to you, Schwinn. If you didn't have Giroud on the bench, he probably wouldn't come off.
I think that's a fair statement. I think it is in most cases to keep Giroud happy, and of course we see Giroud play the full 90 in the cups and in the Europa League. But I think it mostly is to keep Giroud happy. So I think you're right about that, Ted.
Tony, now
can I just butt in on that question?
Yeah, mate. Yeah.
Yeah. It can be answered very simply. He's not fit enough. Yesterday, everyone in the ground thought he was going to come off 5 minutes before he did. He tried to play a ball through to someone, overhit it, and he got tackled or something, and he ended up on the floor. And he was lying there. I think he thought he was on holiday on a deck chair. He's not Premier League 90 minute fit yet. I remember after the Stoke game when we lost, everyone was criticising it, and used or asked me on the podcast, and I said it's actually the same thing, that not one person in the ground was shocked because he's not Premier League fit, like 90 minute Premier League fit yet, because the intensity is completely different. Whether you think it's the better league than France, Spain, Germany, wherever, is a different question, but the intensity is certainly more intense than other leagues, and he's just not got 90 minutes of that in him. The only game he's completed 90 minutes off the top of my head was Leicester, which was his first game, when one, we was desperate for goals, so we just got all of our strikers on the pitch, and two, he actually moved out wide. He didn't play through the middle the whole game.
Yeah, he did too.
He's literally just not fit enough. I think that you can come up with all these theories about Giroud and whatnot, but I think in a way it's protecting him from himself. And I don't know if any of you remember it, as much as I don't want to give the guy credit, Mourinho said, United didn't go for him because he's not fit enough. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there was a lot of other criticisms about him which Mourinho was wrong about, but that one at the moment he looked to be right. But I mean, that'll come. We always say give players a bedding in period when they come to the country. Because he scored a few goals, people seem to want to ignore that bedding in period. His bedding in period isn't with the quality of his finishing, it's with his fitness. Different people have it different ways. Some people's first season is they can't get up to the speed of the Premier League, or the way they play has to change slightly. With him, he's just not Premier League 90 minute fit. So I know people would like to see him stay on and get more goals, especially in a game like yesterday when it is so open. Schwinn referred to wasn't when he got two. He got two against West Brom and came off, but he wasn't ejected then. He got one against Bournemouth, but they were so open. We won 3-0, but it was another one of them games where we was having chance after chance, and he came off in that. And that was the one where he looked dejected, because it was probably the one where he was least tired. But generally, he doesn't argue. I wouldn't say he looks happy to come off, but I think that the subs are pretty much planned because they know what his fitness is like. I think he does have 90 minutes in him if when push comes to shove, as Leicester showed, but it's not ideal. And you'd rather build him up gently. It's like you don't go and run a marathon. You do a short distance, then you build up to a half marathon, and then you do a marathon. And I think that's what the way the club are trying to treat him.
Are our tactics wrong for Lacazette?
I don't think he's good enough to build tactics around him anyway. But as I said earlier, the difficulty with him is you don't really know how he plays, even after watching him for whatever, how many, 8-9 games, however many he's played now. Is he a striker that runs in behind? Is he someone that goes into feet?
He's all over the place.
Yeah,
all over the shop.
So how can your tactics be wrong for someone who is all over the place? That's the question. I don't think he's the type of player. Like certain players, you build a team around them. I don't think he's that type of player. Just in styles, you get players like that they're very good, but you don't build a team around them. And I think he's one of them.
I would have thought Wenger would have taken him under his wing a bit and said, mate, this is how I want you to play. I want you to run through the holes. I don't want you to track back and chase the ball, you know, because your fitness isn't at that point. Just stay up front. The boys, the midfield will put the through balls to you, mate. You run onto them and just score.
I personally think that's the difference, where he is actually very good at pressing from the front. And in the Premier League in general, every player is a defender. Like, you defend from the front because so many teams try and play out from the back. And I think that's where the fitness issues come from, is because at Lyon, he did press from the front, but not as much and not as hard with the same intensity. Mm. So I think the fitness issues are coming where he's having to press from the front more. And he is very, very good at it. It is one of his key strengths, in my opinion. But it's obviously the fitness issue is coming because of that. But it's fine. It will come where there is a time when he's able to do both. But I don't think, especially with someone like Ozil in the team, I don't think you can afford to just say to Lacazette, oh, just let the players go. Don't bother press from the front, because then you're taking him and Ozil's not brilliant at pressing. That's an understatement. You're then taking two of your first line. Like, your attack is now your first line of defence in modern football. So with them two, you're then saying, okay, we've now lost our first two defenders, essentially.
Because the problem, and the other thing that I picked up on last night watching the game was, and Sanchez, he always does it, and he's brilliant at doing it. He can play. He's one of them players that can play out of position. But what I noticed is he was running over to he was playing like a striker role. Lacazette was tracking back. And basically them coming forward, I thought that'd have to take a fair bit of energy out of you. There's a couple of times where he fell over as well.
That's modern football. Yeah. That's modern football. I mean, you say, look, you can think of, say, look, Harry Kane is clearly the best striker in the league, whether we like it as Arsenal fans or not at the moment. I mean, there's an argument for Aguero, but you can't argue with Kane's goals record. He presses, he chases, he harries, and he's a bigger boy than Lacazette. So it's something Lacazette will learn. I'm not criticising for him. I'm just saying.
Oh, no, me either. I'm just pointing out a couple of facts, couple of things that I've seen. That was all. I'm not criticising.
But it's just something that has to be done in modern football. Like when Aguero was in Spain, he was a player that was quick and played off the shoulder and pretty much scored loads of goals. And you saw last season, Guardiola dropped him because he didn't defend.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, like most people would say, I don't care if he scores 30 goals, but that's not good enough anymore.
Yeah, okay. Very cool. Okay, well, I'll go to Carl with this question.
Right.
From? Yeah, no idea. Print and Shoe. He's just talking about a word on Klosinac, defensive abilities, because I think he's not at his best after the international break. And I think Tony touched on it a little bit earlier. So just what's your take on Klosinac since he's come back?
I don't know. Definitely after the international break, his defending hasn't been up to standard, but even before that, it hasn't been that good. You know, first couple of games, you're like, wow, look at this player. But he was really good, for example, Community Shield. Leicester, he had a he was shining out like one of the standout performers against Leicester, even though he conceded three. But Klasenac, since, I don't know if it is what, I know Tony's mentioned it on a few podcasts about his fitness, about his stocky build and that, and how you might struggle with the fast pace of the Premier League. You obviously need that endurance. You're playing, 90 minutes every game because you're not one of the players that's going to be taken off. Mm. He seems that he doesn't feel that he doesn't need to defend at times. Like, he can just, ghost up and down that left flank.
Mm.
And when it comes to a defensive situation, fine. He can wedge a player out, but what if that player is already like 10 feet ahead of him and you can't catch up, and he's like gasping for air and it's only the 60th minute? Like, I don't know. There's got to be something to change in terms of, I don't know, his endurance, but also his concentration about concerning watching runs, tracking runs, staying back a little bit more. Bellerin's the sort of player that, given his pace and his stamina, he is. he can defend and attack at the same time, even if they're, you know, they're not the best, obviously. But I agree that Kolasinac hasn't been so good in terms of his defensive qualities since the international break. But yeah, I counter it saying that it hasn't been any good since the first few games at the start of the season.
Mm-hmm. He's going all right with Sanchez down that left. He seemed to link up pretty well with him yesterday. But
yeah. The link up plays fine. The attacking plays fine. It's just the defensive. Yeah, that's the only thing I would highlight, and his endurance, obviously. Instead.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. So we'll move on. Active follower for you, Savvy. Would you want to see Coughlin and Ramsey in the midfield and in the summer by Nonzi?
Actually, I'll be more than happy with Xhaka and Ramsey or Xhaca and Wilshere right now.
No, he wants Coughlin and Ramsey.
No, I don't want Coughlin and Ramsey.
Leave it all.
No. And Nzonzi, if we are looking to buy a midfield destroyer, he's a very good player. But under Wenger, I don't really know if he'll suit our style. So we really don't know if another manager comes in or Wenger thinks of changing his tactics and he looks for a midfield destroyer. Then Nzonzi is a great buy. But otherwise, I'll be happy with Xhaka and Ramsey or Xhaka and Wilshere.
Mm-hmm.
No Coughlin.
No, because Coughlin goes back to what we discussed earlier. How do you make the team better and bigger and whatnot? And he's one of them players that he's a good off the bench player, but he's not gonna.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, good squad player, but not a starter for me.
Me either. Okay, Schwinn, we'll go around the grounds, mate. On any games that you watched during the weekend.
I did, yeah. I watched a few. I'm not quite sure which was the early kickoff on Saturday, so I think I missed that one.
That threw me, that.
Chelsea. Yeah, I think I missed the Chelsea game, so if someone else wants to touch on that, be my guest. I did watch the record-setting attendance game at Wembley, and Tottenham ran riot yesterday, didn't they? I think they were superb. From the onset, scored in the fourth minute, I think. Thanks
you
to a couple of mistakes.
You mean Tottenham or Harry Kane?
The Harry Kane team, right? I think Pep did a good job of making that mainstream. So I'm glad that's catching on. So yeah, let's refer to them as what they are, the Harry Kane team. I think that was some fabulous play in the beginning by Tottenham. As much as it pains me to say this. A couple of mistakes by Mignolet and I think Lovren it was who fudged that up. Then Harry Kane, of course, finished. He found Son with a great assist for the second goal. That was good. What really surprised me was the change when Lovren was taken off and Chamberlain was put on. Because that's not what you would expect. That's not what you would expect when you need goals, right? But the system was quite weird.
Oh, what a classic. That's right.
One useless player for another.
Pretty much. So I'm not sure what the tactics were there. I think they switched to a different system. Emre Can was playing right wing back, right back. I couldn't tell what was happening on the telly. I was also distracted and doing some other things, so that probably played into it. But yeah, it was what it was. I was expecting, some goals and not for it to be a boring affair. And 4-1, so some exciting goals. And just shout out to Mohamed Salah for somehow tucking that into the back post. And also shout out to Hugo Lloris. I think he had a couple of fantastic saves in the game.
Yeah, nice. Tony, how'd you go, mate? Were you watching anything?
So I watched Watford Chelsea before I travelled up to Liverpool. Watford were disastrously unlucky. Mm. And also, Richarlison, obviously there was the talk about him getting a ban for diving against us. I think Watford probably wish he had at the moment. They literally had two cases for miss of the season. And if he scores either of them, I think they're both at 2-1 and 3-1. It's a different game. Also, the first Chelsea goal, it was a ridiculously good finish from Pedro, but it wasn't a corner. It should have been a goal kick. So I think they're quite unlucky. I mean, Chelsea battled down and done well and done what they had to and got the win, but it wasn't plain sailing, and I think Watford were quite unlucky.
They came from behind, didn't they? Chelsea?
Yeah, it was 2-1, and then Richarlison missed an open goal on his left foot, and then missed a header from about 4 yards. Put it wide, he tried to do too much. I've seen the highlights of all of Saturday's games, but I didn't see any of them live because I was out getting intoxicated. Don't drink, kid.
As you do.
Obviously, I was at Arsenal, and then I watched Tottenham, Liverpool, I think, pretty much touched on everything. The one thing, I don't know how this guy escapes criticism. He is like, Jurgen Klopp has some form of superpower.
I was going to say
his record is worse than Brendan Rodgers, who all Liverpool fans wanted out after he won the season and it was a bit crap. Rodgers has been worse. Klopp's been worse. Yesterday, I don't rate Lovren at all, but I actually feel a bit sorry for him. I don't know, again, how it's been reported around the world, but he's been on painkilling injections for a muscular injury in his back.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they didn't work yesterday. And you can see he actually couldn't leave the floor. Every time he tried to jump, he only got about 6 inches off the floor. And I think both of the goals that were pinned as his fault can be put down to that injury. But in a game that big, I know their other option was probably Ragnar Klavan, who is awful. But you can't play a player that can't jump in a game that big, especially on a pitch that big, when you know that balls are going to be going in behind and he's going to have to turn or jump ahead of them or run and chase them against people that he's not as quick as. So, which means he's going to have to defend deeper, and then that makes heading the ball inevitable. Because if you're deep, teams are going to be putting crosses in. So literally, I cannot believe Klopp's... the reason is, obviously, because Lovren was so bad, all the criticism has gone on him, but Klopp knew he was injured. The change bringing Chamberlain on. And just, again, as a side note, James Milner starting in centre midfield and Chamberlain on the bench is brilliant.
it's amazing. It is. Just touching on Klopp, though, I'll just ask you. So he's already bought, and I call him Red Bull because that's who they are, Red Bull in the bloody Bundesliga team. Leipzig or whatever it's called. They bought that midfielder.
Nebiketa.
Yeah, so is that the reason you think Liverpool are holding on to Klopp?
They were talking about this on the radio as I was driving back from Liverpool last night, and they're saying that it could be the case of he's going to buy a player and actually never, he should, in theory, with how his team's been performing, never get to see that player in a Liverpool shirt. Mm. I mean, it's happened with Leicester recently, in that player that they, was Adrian Silva, they missed out on signing by 14 seconds, and now he's going to sign in January, but the manager who signed him will never get to manage him, so to speak. Mm. And that could be the case with Klopp. Before any fans start biting and say, "Oh yeah, but he got him into the Champions League last year and came in the top four," Rodgers got them to second and still got sacked because he was useless the season after. So it's not. And obviously that's at the same club, so it's a perfect example because it's the same board doing the hiring and sacking. It's a weird one, Liverpool. It kind of reminds me when we're talking about replacing Cech for sort of big money. Liverpool spent quite a lot of money in the summer and players they didn't necessarily need. Salah's been very good for them. He's been better than I thought he would be. But you didn't look at that Liverpool team last season and think what they really need is a right winger. Similarly with Chamberlain, you didn't look at them and think they need whatever it is that Chamberlain does.
Are we classing Chamberlain as a right winger as well, or where are we putting him now?
He's never going to play in the middle for them. We all knew that.
So they signed two right wingers.
Yeah, and as I said, you looked at them last season and said they probably needed a goalkeeper, a left back, and a centre back. They didn't sign a keeper. They signed a left back who's seemingly now third choice, Andy Robinson. They signed from Hull. I've seen quite a lot of him. I actually think he's quite good, but he's not got a look in there. Moreno, who they didn't want anywhere near the team last season, is somehow now first choice. They didn't sign a centre back, but then they said they paid $70 million for Navigator next summer. They can improve in the centre midfield, but again, it wasn't the urgent. This is where you need to improve. And as we've said, they signed two right wingers. And it's similar to it's how I think of us when people are saying, oh, we need to go and spend 40 million, say, on an improvement for Cech. I agree we could do with an improvement for Cech. And I've been saying for a long time I'd love Jack Butland at Arsenal. But there is other places where the money would be better spent.
Yeah, 40 or 50 million on Butland, I'd imagine. Yeah, it's I could think of better we could place that money, yeah. I was just having a look, because I just want to have a shout-out, and suck shit fucking Leicester. Like, yeah, okay, you got the win, but you sacked your fucking manager. You should never have sacked fucking Claudio, so suck shit, and I hope you get relegated. Anyway, that's fine. fucking arseholes. And while I'm doing a shout-out, suck shit to Manchester United, too, because they got done by Huddersfield, and who's the little Aussie who scored a goal, boys?
Yeah. Oh, Moy.
Good on you. Okay. Yeah.
Former Man City player, too, so that rubs it in even a little more.
Yes, it does. Carl, what do you watch, mate?
I didn't watch anything, but I want to ask if Troy Deeney, for some reason, listened to the podcast. Have you got your cojones after the Chelsea game?
What happened?
Did Troy Deeney lose his cojones, I put in quotation marks, after he choked that 2-1 lead at Stamford Bridge?
Well, I think you should be asking Richarlison that.
Well, it's good to see they're all listening anyway. We spoke to everyone, haven't we? Savvy, did I spoke to you? You watched something?
Yeah. Yeah, I watched the United game. I loved how Huddersfield beat them, and I think they were awful. Lindelof, I think they're 32 million defender. He was, I think that was schoolboy stuff, the way he defended the second goal. And I saw the Chelsea game. Yeah, Richarlison, had Richarlison scored, they would have gone to win that game. Then Liverpool, yeah, I agree. I think... when Rodgers was sacked, he had, I think, two wins in 9 games. And right now, Klopp has 1 win in last 9 games. So, I don't know. And I think the media loves him because he jumps a lot and he celebrates with his players a lot. That's why he doesn't get any criticism. But and he was very bad after the game in his post-match conference. Because he directly put all the blame to the players and he never stood by the players and said, it is my responsibility we lost. He just said, it is down to the players. And he just shifted the blame onto the players, which is really very unprofessional because he's the one who's managing the players. And I think he's massively overrated. And other games, I watched the Serie A game. I think it was... Napoli against Inter.
Yeah, it was a very good game. And for a nil-all draw, wasn't it?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it was a very good game. I think Inter had some chances. Napoli had some good chances. I think Insigne, he was looking very good and dangerous. Hamsik, he was good. I think Napoli could have won that game had they finished one or two of their chances. But yeah. In the end, Inter put more pressure, so it was a fair result, and it was a very good game to watch.
Interesting. Yeah, it was good. Sorry, I was just thinking, Champions League last week, the Roma-Chelsea game, it was a cracking game, if you didn't see
it. Yeah, it was a great game.
It finished 3-3, and
3-3.
It was a really good game, so... if you catch the highlights.
Zeko missed the sitter in extra time.
Yeah.
Roma could have easily won that game.
Yeah. Actually, Roma were played the better game, I think.
They were
definitely the better team on the day. And another suck shit AC Milan. Okay. You can follow us at clockend_talk and you can follow the blog at clockend.blog. Thanks, guys, for joining us, and thank you, everybody, for listening, downloading. Rate us on iTunes. Ask us a question at Twitter. We're all happy to have a yak. And thanks, Tony.
No worries.
Thanks, Carl. Thanks, Savvy. And thanks,
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Good
thanks
on
for having me, guys.